how we incentivize that at Ubiquity Press, and how we think that that can improve the rigor of the scientific communications process. For those of you who don't know much about us, Ubiquity Press is a researcher-led press. We're a spin-out from UCL. Before we were at UCL doing PhDs, a couple of us were working for companies like Elsevier and Springer, and we decided we didn't like the closed traditional publishing model. We didn't feel it was serving the research community well. So what we do now is we see researchers themselves as our number one stakeholder as a publisher, and we try to do everything to improve publishing for researchers. And I'll go into details about why we do that and how. There used to be a little clicker here somewhere, but yeah. So this is a cartoon where we try to sort of get you thinking a little bit about why researchers want to publish. And it's not just because they want to become immortal or something, or God. But so Richard Dawkins, of course, is extremely popular. He's managed to publish in Port Magazine, as you can see there, which probably has an APC of $5,000 or something. But researchers want their research to be as widely disseminated as possible. I think that's the most important thing they want from publishing. I mean, a lot of people have said that researchers want to publish in the best journals, for example. They want prestige. But I think what they really want is the widest possible dissemination. They want to reach the most people in the research community they can, and they want their research to have impact. And if the preconception is that the top name journals are the way to do that, that's a situation we've got to. But it's not the number one reason, I think, why researchers publish. So this is a very popular slide that everyone's seen before. It's the first journal that was published, and the idea being that we publish in order to disseminate our information among the research community. And this is what you can call the social contract of science. As researchers, we agree that we will disseminate our research among the research community so that it can be validated and that it can be further developed, so people can stand on the shoulders of giants, et cetera, and they can drive science forwards. That's very, very important. And the only way to do that is if you actually make all of your information available. It's not just a research article or a monograph. You also need to make the data available. You need to explain the methodologies you used. You need to make the software available that you did this research with if you want other people to actually be able to build upon it, and if you want the research community to actually be able to move forward efficiently. So if you don't do those things, the argument, this is something that Jeffrey Bolton said a few weeks ago and I really like, you're guilty of scientific malpractice. You're not following the best practices of science. You're not communicating with other researchers in a way that is appropriate. And it's not just researchers who are technically can be guilty of this. It's also publishers. If publishers don't make an effort to make the data available, if they don't make an effort to widely distribute and openly distribute their content, they're also guilty of malpractice because they're not enabling science in the way that it is fullest sense. And it's also libraries and repositories that don't do this as well. It's a whole community. So there are a lot of benefits to making data, et cetera, available. So this is a graphic we use to try and communicate that to researchers. So it's not just about the fact that they can get for themselves a lot of citations and therefore career recognition and new collaborations. We've seen several studies presented which show that researchers who share their data openly receive more citations, et cetera. It's the same thing with their software. But there are also a lot of public benefits. One of the things we've heard a lot about is non-commercial licenses during the week. I think that non-commercial licenses for research outputs are indefensible, and as a public taxpayer, I'm quite offended by the fact that anyone would offer a non-commercial license for research outputs, because commercial companies in this country, for example, fund research through their taxes, and if they're not then if those results are not available to them to do something with afterwards and get some gain from, that's not really a defensible thing. And I think publishers who do that should really think about it. And I think the government will probably start to force them to think about it. So economic benefits for the private sector are very important. Opportunities for citizen science, public trust in science. If we don't put our data out there and allow people to validate what we've done, as you've seen in the ClimateGate situations and so forth, that can cause serious problems. And on the other side, what we talked about before, the research community gains a lot of benefits as well. They can find data quickly. It's preserved for the longer term. You can do more efficient research. You can do new research by mashing up a lot of this data. There's some really incredible studies that are going to come out in the next few years where people have taken data from all over the place that was never possible before. And this is all driven by the fact that researchers are able to disseminate all of their outputs more widely. So we really believe that by encouraging people to make things open, we can encourage them to do so, to do their work more rigorously, produce higher quality data and research outputs, and that's better for science as a whole, of course. So there was a study from Jelte Wickets at the University of Amsterdam a couple of years ago where they looked at, especially in psychology data, and they found that people who shared their data had far less statistical errors within that data, whereas the data behind papers that, that didn't make the data available had far higher proportion of errors within them. So just the very fact that people knew they were going to make their data available made them tidy it up more and produce more robust and rigorous science. One of the other issues we're looking at is the fact that when people do make data available, they make it available all over the ecosystem. There are lots and lots of siloed locations where we store research data. So we have national repositories, we have institutional repositories, subject-specific ones and general ones. These are some of the ones we work with on just one of our journals, our data journals. And the idea is that if data is spread across all of these locations, it's very, very hard to discover it. So what we're trying to do is find a solution to make that all more coherently findable. And the way we're doing that at Ubiquity Press is what we call a meta-journal. And we see the meta-journal as being a way of incentivizing the sharing and of all sorts of research outputs. So there are many repositories out there. Some of them hold software, some hold data, some hold bioresources, like this young mosquito here. And we need to make all of those things findable. We need to make them all citable and make the dissemination of these objects and the tracking of their reuse as easy as possible. And it's the reuse that's the key word. We want to encourage reuse of these objects. So what we do is we create meta journals. In this case, we're talking about a meta journal being a data journal. So we have an object in a repository, which is the data set, and it has a DOI or a similar identifier. We're pretty identifier agnostic as long as the identifiers are persistent. And then you have a data paper in a data journal. And we call them data, rather than descriptors or so forth, we call them data papers because we think people are used to publishing. They see value in publishing papers. And if you're really going to incentivize people to publish data, then they think more logically about getting credit for putting papers out there. They see that these can be cited and that they'll get academic and career credit for that. And the paper, of course, has a DOI, and they both point to each other. So from the paper, you get back to the data, and from the data, you get to the paper. And then what happens is all the research articles that are written that use that data can cite the paper. So, I mean, there's a good reason for doing that, and this isn't about double-splitting publication and that sort of thing. The data paper describes the data only. It doesn't describe the research outputs or all that type of stuff, but it's the important thing here is that you're able to reference the data from the actual research itself. They're two completely separate things. And what you get from that is because the data paper is a regular paper, it has a Crossref DOI, you're able to then use the cited by system, the Crossref half, to actually track all the citations of that data. One of the problems we have is that if we use, for example, a data cite DOI, there's no such system available there. So no matter how many times someone cites a data cite DOI, we can't say who cited it and what kind of impact that data is having and how it's being reused. So the idea there really is that the data paper sits in the middle. It's a proxy for the data. It's something that people are used to citing. It doesn't, instead of like a normal DOI citation, a research article, it doesn't get stripped out. It sits in the reference list like a normal paper, and researchers are used to citing it in that manner. So data journal, just really mentioned those two things. data, it solves the citation problem, and it makes us able to track the impact of things. So just to give you a quick 2 minutes, a quick to go into that a little bit more detail. Data paper describes the methodology with which the data set was created, describes the data set itself. The most important thing is it talks about the reuse potential of the data. It really is out there to advocate for someone to go and find that data and reuse it and advance science with it. It's often authored by a data scientist, which is very, very important because we have a lot of people who mainly produce data. And if that data is reused, they're often the fourth, fifth, or sixth author on a research paper, if they're on there at all. This is a way for them to gain credit as the first author for the work that they've done. And the important thing is it's citable, so we can track its reuse. What it's not is not a research paper. It only describes the data set and the reference, and it references the research papers that use it. And it's very, very important that if people are writing research papers, the best thing is if they've already written the data paper to go with it, so they can cite it in that research paper so people can go back and validate what they've done. They can locate the data from the final research paper. And the important thing is it's also not a replication of the information in a data repository. It adds value. It's a narrative. It's a story about the data. So the important thing also is that we have peer review. Paper contents, a very light peer review of data paper is a very quick thing. Just making sure that the methods provide sufficient detail so you can understand how it was created, that the resource is correctly described, and there's a good reuse section. Okay, so data papers really are rich metadata. But we do then check the data, and this is also very quick. This is not about the quality of the data. It's good if people publish bad data, because that way we can go back and say, well, actually all the conclusions in your research paper are actually invalid, for example. So it does actually serve an important purpose. But we check that it's in a correct repository, that it's the right sort of repository for that community. That repository is sustainable. It's going to be there in the long term. They've given an open license, which permits unrestricted license, access. The data is in a non-proprietary and open format. It's labeled correctly, so people can go in and understand it and use it, and it's actionable. So if it requires software to make sense of it, then that's available too. So what I'm talking about here, and this is my second to last slide, I think, is that low barriers are really, really essential, we think, to incentivizing open data publication. So we're providing an online authoring tool, which is very, very much like filling out a metadata form. What this actually means is we can move straight to XML. We don't have to have a typesetting team, et cetera. We can keep the cost low. It's a very short, concise metadata format. We integrate with the repositories that we work with as much as possible so that when someone writes the data paper, the data goes straight into the repository. For example, with Dryad, when they get there, all their details are already filled out, so it's a very quick process. And we review best practices, not groundbreaking science. We're not asking people to create incredible data sets. We're only going to take the best ones. We're not asking people to write highly detailed descriptions. We're trying to make this very easy and quick for them, because if they're going to share their data, they're only going to do it if it's easy. And we also try to make it as cheap as possible. So we have a £25 APC. And we're working on funding for all of these journals to ensure that, in most cases, that won't even be asked for. And the journals we're looking at, we started off with a journal called Journal of Open Archaeology Data as a pilot. And there's an example of a paper, and it's, I'm not sure how to use the laser, probably shoot myself in the eye. But you can see sort of the impact metrics that are coming up on the top right corner there, sort of talking about the reuse of the data. And we're going from there. We're now working with Dons in the Netherlands to put together an open psychology data journal, because there's been a lot of data fraud in the Netherlands, which is quite famous now, which has badly damaged people's confidence in psychological research. So we're putting that journal together really to make that data validatable. Public Health Data is a journal which is launching in the next couple of weeks, which is drawing a lot of interest. And it's these sorts of journals where we get this data out to people, especially in developing countries, et cetera, where we can really make a big difference in the world. Open Research Software is another journal where we're doing exactly the same thing, but with software. Bioresources, so if you want to be able to cite your mosquitoes or tissue cultures and things like that and how they're being used around the world and cited in journal articles, you can do that. Economic data, geospatial data, et cetera, are the things that were planned. So what we're trying to do is build a big platform of data journals that cover all these subject areas but can be searched across. People can match up data sets from different disciplines and start doing interesting cross-disciplinary research with them as well. Thank you.